Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, the movie and talk show podcast that comes your way every Saturday, whether you're ready for it or not, in our quest for total world domination.
Talk shows usually have guests. We don't.
That's very true. So what are we? Well, we're the book club for movies.
I mean, I guess unless you count like the guest is each of us who sits in the hot seat. Yeah. Technically, the guest seat every week.
Yep.
And is questioned mercilessly about the movie that they brought.
It is a bit of an interrogation.
I know. It's like, bit. Why did you bring this movie?
Especially if it's something that, you know, it's personal to you.
Yeah.
Sometimes we bring shit and we're just like, I've never seen this before. Like tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michaela. We have to introduce everybody whose first rodeo this is with the world-renowned Saturday Night Freak Show podcast.
Ooh.
These are the internet radio superstars.
Sean.
Michaela.
And I'm Colin. And tonight we are interrogating
Michaela. Michaela, raise your right hand.
I can't commit until I know what I'm
repeat after
to.
Me. I promise to tell I promise to tell you what movie we watched tonight.
We got brain scanned.
Brain scan from the year
1994.
Yeah. Okay.
This one seems like it's been a long time coming.
If nothing else, for any horror fan who's ever heard of brain scan or seen the poster,
I feel like I've always seen that poster. The poster's iconic, right? Like
iconic. It's I think
like videos, like grocery store movie section.
Yeah, it's known in the fact that I'm like, all right, this movie's called Brain Scan. Who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah.
And it still doesn't make sense. After watching the movie, who specifically he is.
Yeah.
But I have other questions. Directed by?
John Flynn.
John Flynn. Okay, we know John Flynn.
Yeah, he did Lock Up with Sylvester Stallone.
Which we did on this show.
No, not Lock Up.
We did Tango and Cash.
We did.
Which feels like
The one that
did Lock Up?
The one that had like two other sequels with.
I think
Wait, was Lock Up? Wait, which
no,
was
No,
Up?
No, no, that's.
Lock Up is like a prison drama.
Yeah, from the. The 89s.
We have not watched this on the show.
Lock Up?
We have not.
Maybe we did it in a previous freak show iteration?
Not while I was on the show. Yeah, have not.
Oh, because it sounds like the one Stallone. Well, no, that wasn't a Stallone movie. What was the one winter prison movie?
I see you. That was a Stallone
Detox.
Movie.
That
Detox.
Was
yeah.
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 Yeah. Okay. Was that Stallone movie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that's not that.
No.
Okay.
No.
What is Lock Up?
Different
then?
Movies. Anyways, he also did Out for Justice, the Steven Seagal movie.
Right. Okay. So. Okay. That was
this is
like
probably
the
what he's best known for.
What was
Seagal's like Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
No. He did Fire Down Below after that.
He
I
did
think.
A bunch of.
That was the one with William Forsythe.
Right.
Yeah.
What was the Stallone Schwarzenegger movie where they're prisoners?
Escape Plan.
Okay,
that was the one that had the sequels. That's what you were thinking of.
All right, that's the one I was thinking of. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
By anybody specific?
Oh yeah,
Andrew Kevin Walker.
So this is a big deal on retrospect. Now that we know who Andrew Kevin Walker is,
95.
Mm-hmm. So the year after this,
yeah.
We
have
what an
seven.
Upgrade.
Yeah.
Serial killer movie, and then we go to killer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but
maybe.
Was
Did
this
someone
his?
See something in him, and just
was
like,
it his first movie?
Take a look.
Because I guess
it was. Yeah, okay. This is his first movie. Yeah,
written like I'm sure there was something.
Yeah, look, Brain Scan, and then Hideaway, and then Seven.
Yeah, at least produced
8mm
scripts.
Oh, he did like the Nick Cage 8mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know.
I've never seen that movie.
Well, we tried to bring it, and it got vetoed. So. It was one of the listener request ones.
Oh, well, I was going to say, we vetoed a movie?
It was a tiebreaker, and Hollywood did not want to watch it.
Oh, gotcha.
Well, Andrew Kevin Walker then wrote Seven, and we have now seen his first produced screenplay. Can you see the influence of Andrew Kevin Walker on this? It just seems like this feels like one, like if you talk to him, he'd be like, yeah, I wrote this script and they totally changed it and I don't really like, I mean, I would be surprised.
I believe he wrote a serial killer movie and they're like, let's put video games in it.
Yeah.
There's something
that feels like it, but maybe
I mean, it feels my first, I feel like it feels like a first time screenplay, you know? So I'm not, it's
well, it
not bad, but it feels not
wrote,
polished.
But
but the first thing that's being made that he wrote, you know?
Yeah. First thing being made.
Starring.
Oh,
Edward Furlong.
Edward Furlong.
Oh, my God. Every time I have to be exposed to this kid,
What do you have against Edward Furlong?
Because his main method of acting is yelling.
Yeah.
Like
exactly.
That's how he gets across everything.
Yes.
Is I'm just going to yell my lines.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was actually found on like a street.
He was. It was the soda fountain thing. The whole Marilyn Monroe thing. We're just like,
You for Terminator 2 when they did the casting is who's going to be young John Connor. And they literally picked him off the street.
Yeah.
And that gave him a Hollywood career. So this is after Pet Sematary 2.
Yes. Mm. Oh, is he on the wall? Pretty close to it.
Where in X? Whatchamacallit? What's the
American History X?
American History X. Yeah.
That's.
That's close to this. That 96, is. Maybe?
That might be later 90s, second half of the decade.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because he was still young enough in that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
1998.
Oh, 98. All right. Mm-hmm. There we go.
And that's kind of the serious drama movie that, I mean, he was in something else, I think, that was also, but I mean, like his, the things that I remember is Terminator 2, Pet Sematary 2, American History X, and the remake of Night of the Demons. Has he done anything
Detroit
else?
Detroit Rock City?
He was in the remake, he was in the remake of Night of the Demons?
Yeah.
I've never seen that one.
Yeah.
We've seen the original, we did it here.
But, yeah. Yeah, he's in the remake of Night of the Demons. So
I wouldn't mind watching
Eddie Furlong, top lines, brain scan.
A kid of the 90s.
Yeah.
And of nothing else.
Yeah. But this he flamed out.
Can we all just not forget a T2 Adventure Through Time or whatever the Universal Studios sequel to Terminator 2?
The one you can only see in Florida if you went Universal
there,
Studios.
Yeah. Which is a great ride.
Yeah.
Or it was a great. Yeah, because I was there.
It was like 4D.
Yeah, it was in 4D. It's also a live stunt show where there's shit happening on stage in front of you as well. It was a really good thing. Like, I think James Cameron helped design.
I think he did. He direct it?
He directed it as well. It was really good.
Brain scan comes at us from a specific era in movie history.
Right. CD-ROM gaming.
Yes.
Which, I love it.
Which, I remember personally.
So, but here's the thing. I mean, like, I remember, you know, I mean, I was a teenager when computers kind of went from
when
the floppy disk to,
basically.
Well, during my lifetime, it seems like
I was going to say, Colin, you have seen the lifespan.
From the Commodore 64 on the Apple IIc all the way to the 386 and the 486 and the Pentium.
He's got model numbers.
Yeah.
Pentium processors. Holy shit.
Yeah.
The Intel Pentium.
Yeah.
This is probably from that era, right?
I mean, it feels like it. Back when, again, CD-ROM game was, you had a CD, but it was encased in a little case that you.
Well, I've never seen what they do in this movie, right? Like, all the CD-ROMs I've ever used.
Short-lived, I think.
It's like a. You know, like a CD tray comes out, you put the disc in and away you go. But in this movie, you load the CD in what looks like a jewel case, but then you insert the jewel case into the the drive.
Yeah.
I've never seen that in real life.
No? Okay, because I remember this. Again.
Really?
I remember it. Short-lived, because I think the technology at that point was rapidly progressing. In its small way, if that makes sense, it went from certain things.
Just like how we had the big floppy disks and the little ones. Yeah.
Like the way how quick that went, it felt like this was just a modicum of that time.
Yeah, the evolution of the computer of computer technology just in like just you know yeah.
Yeah, a certain amount of time it went real quick.
20 years. This is 20 years old.
30
years old movie. Yeah, 94. Yeah. This is the era of the it's kind of the cautionary computer tale.
Yes, it is.
What's the cautionary computer tale according to that you remember? What's the that was from?
I mean, it's gonna make you into
96, 97.
It's gonna make you into a murderer and desensitize it.
Which
is like the common argument
is like the one you think of when you're like the computers are scary.
I don't think a movie. I think more
Evil maybe, Speak.
Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah,
this felt like an elongated rated R. Are You Afraid of the Dark episode? Basically,
yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I think maybe this was more portrayed on television at the time.
Right.
Like, well, there was for some reason the net comes to mind.
Yes!
It was like
yes,
but that was after this.
Fear.com was after this.
The Lawnmower Man.
We
need to
Ghost in the Machine.
Yeah.
So, like, there was a bunch of movies basically telling you, like,
this burgeoning technology.
Computers are scary things, right? And here's the horror version of the computers. What is a brain scan?
It's a CD-ROM video game, but it's so immersive that, what they say, it's sharper than real life or something like that in the pitch. Yeah. So it's an immersive simulator game.
Yeah, and basically, it's a simulation.
They make it sound like you're going to solve a puzzle or solve a murder, but you're really committing a murder.
Yeah. So I was actually playing CD-ROM horror games at this time, like The Seventh Guest and Phantasmagoria and that kind of stuff. And I guess
just text would come as like, you have been murdered.
The adventure game. So I guess I don't know, and it's been a long time since I saw the trailer for this, but I thought, you know, you hear it's a video game horror movie, right? He plays a video game, so I guess I thought that there was going to be some kind of like actual video gaming in this, but something, there isn't.
It's
really.
Something that you would play rather than your character being thrust into a simulation.
Right. Basically.
But even then, I say thrust into
but
a simulation.
But not Tron-like.
But it's not. But the simulation is like just...
It's just POV shots.
Yeah, that's it.
But how does the technology work? Or what is the brain? What does it do?
Okay, this is
nothing. There's no technology.
It literally tells us it doesn't matter and not to worry about it. The movie says it doesn't have to make
sense.
The movie literally says it doesn't have to make
sense. It's like it's broadcasting a signal that.
But you have to call a phone number. You have to.
Igor, call 1-800-555 here.
Yeah, we're burying the lead here. Igor's in this movie.
Igor's in this movie. Igor's first starring role. Yes. Igor, bravo, sir. You looked great.
I'm sad it took us this long to get Igor's movie on the freak show. I know.
Igor's been keeping the secret from us that he's a movie star. Yes. It's like when you meet someone who's just like, yes, I did that back in the day.
He worked with Eddie Furlong and didn't tell us. Yeah,
I was like,
Igor's our mailman, long time. Yeah. Well, he has this. How does Igor show up?
It's like a video phone, but like Igor's like his video phone assistant. Yeah. And Igor's like literally a little like monster man that shows up and is like, you have a phone call on his TV.
And he says, yes, he says, yes, master. And then he holds the phone out with a phone call.
Yes.
It's great.
Like almost like, here's the mail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a voice activated system.
His role hasn't changed much over the years.
No.
Igor is always going to Igor.
Here's the Igor.
Like analog to him compared to like wow, he had video phones in the 90s, you know.
I know, I thought this technology back when I saw it, you know, I mean, because it didn't exist, you know.
Yeah, when it showed up there was a video call, I'm just like, holy shit, this is really advanced.
And he's live streaming his neighbor getting undressed to his TV as well.
Or did he record it and he was playing?
Yeah, because I'm like, that? I don't think that can happen. Yeah. Like, we don't have the cords for that.
So I guess there had been Videodrome was in 83, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the idea that there was a signal buried within the blanking signal of the television set that could hypnotize you. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, that's what's happening. They did. It is just they took Videodrome. Instead of giving you a tumor, it just, you know, alters your reality and gives you this video game. Or it's not a video game. No, a simulation.
You call the phone number, which, what was it?
1-800-555-FEAR.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then when you're on the phone, brain scan shows up on your TV.
Yeah.
With the logo and the character, which we'll get into.
Right. It's like instant connectivity. Once you call it, you're in.
I thought it was like a modem, you know, like you had to dial in, but there was no dial until, but he always has to call the number for it to show up on his monitor. So,
And then he gets like his virtual reality through his brain.
It's like, it's on the way. It's like they know everything about you right off the bat as soon as you call them.
Okay,
like, we know who you are. We know where you live. We're sending it right now.
Confused a little bit about the movie. Okay. Now, so we learn about Brain Scan through Fangoria Magazine.
God bless him.
Which features a lot in this movie. Yes. So nice product placement. You know that the reporter from Fangoria is going to visit the set and all this. You're going to get all this coverage.
Featuring a Sleepwalkers cover, by the way. A nice close-up shot on a Sleepwalkers cover.
So the idea is there's an ad in Fangoria, so the horror nerds will find this, and it's a horror video game, and so you call the number.
Those horror nerds, they're easy. We can manipulate them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We call the number, and by calling the number, the guy who answers the phone, like, you think you're going to get a recording, but you actually get the guy, right? Yeah. The which we later realize is the brain scan demon or whatever. But he answers the phone. And during this phone call, I don't know if you remember this, there is a moment where there's a bunch of flashes of light and Edward Furlong appears to have a seizure.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like he gets scanned real quick.
Yep.
Okay, over the he's just sitting. He's not the phone up to his ear or anything. He's like
a light comes down.
Yeah,
he has a little seizure, like you said, and then he's like, oh, like he experienced an orgasm at that point.
Yep. Okay.
Like,
yep.
So
I want more.
We're gonna spoil this movie, just so you know. So
it is spoilers, 30 years old.
If we haven't already.
Yeah.
Right. So we're assuming that you have seen the movie at this point, but I think in order to talk about this, I need to spoil where the movie is going to go, but.
I love Colin's intro to the spoiler every week, like it's never happened.
I know, but it's just so for the new like we've new never listeners. Said this before. New, if this is your first time going
see,
through,
Colin, businessman, Colin is always thinking about the new listener.
So, at this point in the movie, knowing where it's going to go, this seems like a good splice point, if you know what I mean. To
right,
but
you're correct.
This isn't actually the moment that the brain scan begins.
Mm-hmm.
What is the point of this then? What happened there and why did this scene take place? Because you think at the end of the movie you'd connect back to this moment, but it doesn't. It connects back to the first time he actually got the CD and booted it up. Am I right? Remembering this right?
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, that's...
All right.
Because when he...
I can at only the end go of the movie, based on... All right.
You brain have to scans go based on the
clothes.
Television.
You have to go based on clothes. Because what he's wearing at the end... He hasn't been wearing before. So I get what you're asking, but I don't. I would have thought that the moment you said was the moment you could splice was actually the moment you could splice.
Yeah.
Is it not?
No, they come in like when, as far as I remember it, like he, when he put the disc in, he got the, that's when he saw the brain scan on the television.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's the moment we come back to, because I suppose it wouldn't make any sense for you to call a number and them to just freely give you this interactive experience.
You got to have the CD-ROM.
Yeah, somehow you got to pay for it or something. But apparently he doesn't. I don't know how the commerce of brain scan actually works.
Well, I don't think it matters based on the... We get a fucking digital demon that comes in. So I don't think the payment plan...
It's a supernatural thing.
I don't think it quite matters.
Yeah.
Well, you have to buy at least the first disc. The game is like, there's going to be four discs, but you're already in the game at that point.
But also where we end up at the end of the movie doesn't match up with anything previously in the movie. He's not wearing any of that. If we're going by that.
Really? When he woke up and
he's not wearing that. No.
And all that stuff sitting next to him and all that. I thought
that's the same. And I get what you're saying with that. But if we're going by like... His clothes are not the same, which they should be if you're going to do that thing.
I can't remember.
Because he's wearing the red checked flannel over his
which he wasn't wearing, you're saying, in any of the earlier?
Wasn't wearing.
Then this movie gets even more perplexing.
To do that connection for it should have been. Why they didn't, I don't know. But I get what you're saying.
All right, so the tale is going to follow the adventures of young Eddie Furlong playing a character named Michael Brown?
Bauer.
Yes. Brower.
Mm. And
there's the movie begins with a lot of disconnected sequences. They're all edited like out of order. Mm. We see a dog running through a yard.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We see a person crawling across broken glass on a rainy night. We see someone being wheeled into a hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Was there one other one? That I was like, I don't know what the hell we're looking at.
There's like close-ups of him in the hospital bed.
Yeah. We get these images where you're just like, it's close enough or it's obscure enough. You're just like, oh.
And it's bizarre.
We see a purse skewed out on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And moving across that again. And the other images you saw or you said. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, all right, how does this all come together?
How does it all come together?
It all comes together in that Edward Furlong and his mother were in a car accident very early on, earlier on in his life, in which his mother died and he was... injured. Mm-hmm. He had his knee was all.
Gross. Yeah.
Yeah. We get bone protruding from his leg earlier on in the movie. So there was an accident where he lost his mother earlier on in the movie.
And so this has now put him in a position where, as a teenager, I think he's in high school.
His dad has gone a lot on business and everything, but they make enough money where he has a fucking loft, attic.
A three-story house.
It's a three-story house.
Huge.
He's got an attic bedroom, which is basically an apartment.
Yeah, and it's like one of those cool 90s like loft apartments.
Yeah,
you know exactly what I'm saying.
Every kid who watches it is jealous of having that room. Yes.
I found myself just looking at all the set decoration at the room every time.
It is. You look around, you're like, oh, he's got that, he's got that.
He's got the like bubble lamps. He's got all the desk toys you imagine.
All the video, all the movies that you probably want to watch are in the background on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh yeah, he's got a computer set up so he can, you know, because this is what he does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And across the next to him, he has a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
what was the neighbor?
How are we introduced to the pair of them? Because I think we're basically introduced to him waking up from a dream
and spying on her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's a dynamic that's happening here that I guess you're trying to read is like, okay, here's the skeevy guy peering at his neighbor.
Is the filmmaker trying to make this more consensual to make him less creepy?
Yeah, I don't understand why this even exists in this movie. This
dynamic
plot. Yeah, this whole relationship between the two of them. Yeah,
at least this version of him watching her, but her knowing about it. Right. I guess it doesn't have to.
Yeah, it doesn't have any impact on the movie.
So. Is this raising some kind of stakes because it's possible she'll be a victim and all this stuff
right,
later
but
on?
Why, yeah, but why the weird back and forth of I watch you, you watch me? What is that? What does that benefit this movie at all?
I think we're going to have to spoil this, too, because I'd like to go through this relationship to the end where you're like, what the fuck? Okay. Yeah. So he watches her undress.
Mm-hmm.
But
tapes it.
Yes.
And
tapes. So that's why I was thinking, like, does he have a library of this? But I think we're only shown the one night. But the impression I got from watching it is that she knows he's watching her.
Yes.
Yep.
And so she's doing this on purpose.
Right.
So you're like, oh, okay, these folks have so do they know each other?
Yeah.
Was the first question that they have.
And when they do interact, it feels like, yeah, they do. And they have known each other for a little bit of time before this. So this
you're saying as the movie goes on, this is the impression that you're getting.
Like the moment we're introduced to them, it ends up being a thing that they do for each other. Like they know each other's doing what they're doing. He's filming her, but she's also doing it for him in some regard.
Yeah, and then later, there's the implication that she's taking pictures of him in his room.
There's that, yeah. So they are voyeuristic.
She even says, I knew you were watching me because I watch you too.
Yeah,
so they're voyeurs.
But this is like a romantic thing.
Yeah,
it's
weird.
In a
weird way, a thing they do without talking about
each other. Why do they have to be freaks? Why can't... I mean, it's great that they found each other, but like,
freaks found each other. Do we have to question it? Come on, let them be in love.
I'm questioning it from a narrative standpoint of why is this in this movie? Why? What does it like...
To titillate the viewer.
Okay, sure.
It'll be weird if she actually gets off on him actually watching, which kind of condones the idea that you can watch girls in their
I think the point here is that it was consensual both ways.
But
take that away from it if nothing else.
But here's the thing. So everything that you said that you've learned about her and his relationship, because all of a sudden he goes over to her house to talk to her.
Right.
You know, like, can you ask, Amy or whatever to come down, or maybe that was the actor's name. But talking to her parents, I'm like, is this the first time he's ever gone over and actually talked to her? Because his friend is saying, go for it, dude, you gotta go over and talk to her.
I don't think it is. They probably grew up like across from each other.
See, I was wondering about that.
It's been this thing forever.
She comes over to his house a couple of times.
The parents are just like, we know you. We don't exactly agree on but we know you, so come on in.
But by the end of the movie, all of that never actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now you have to go it was him and her taking pictures of it or whatever.
Right.
We know that he's looking at her. And at the end of the movie, when he finally does go to talk to her for, I think, the first time,
is that what you guys got?
Yeah.
I don't think so, but continue on.
Well, the only reason I guess I say it because of the buildup that his friend is saying, go for it, dude. You need to talk to her. Otherwise, other guy.
I need to officially ask her out. Because there can be that whole relationship without officially asking her to be. Again, I don't know if
I don't know either.
Feel like they've known, they've talked. I feel like there's a thing there, but to officially ask her out is the thing.
Well, I guess the thing that adds to the way that I read it that they had never actually spoken was there was a scene where he's watching her on video and he calls her and he watches her answer the phone. And then he chickens out and he, hangs up right. on her. So he just gets to see her reaction on the videotape, mm-hmm. which to me tells me he's working up to actually talking right. to her for right. the first
but
time.
But in that regard, she knows that it's him, but or she knows that he's watching at that moment.
Because she looks out the window.
So he's working up to talk to her, but they have this consensual back and forth of filming each other in place, but he hasn't talked to her.
Now, the filming thing was also like established during the part of the movie that no longer exists.
Yeah.
However, at the end, when he finally mm-hmm. does go up to her and mm-hmm. ask her out, mm-hmm. she does have pictures of yes. him. So yes. she has actually been taking yes. pictures of him.
So I think that's the relationship until he talks to her.
That's fucking weird. That's so backwards.
I agree.
You've never had a conversation, but yet you have an understanding that you're doing this mutual ritual.
I think there is something before that. I don't think it was just this. And that the back and forth is I tape you tape me. I think there was probably something more. I have nothing.
Let
that
me
says
make
this
it
true.
Even weirder.
Okay, go for it.
And that is he finally gets up the courage to ask her out, and she's like, I don't think so. And you're like,
what
you have been
that?
Taking your clothes off in front of your window.
So frustrating.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
I hate
like,
this whole plot
it's,
so
it's her
much.
Decision. That's fine. If she wants to say no, that's fine. But, yeah.
but she acted disgusted.
Right.
That
but
he
it feels
even
like
asked.
There's been a mutual
she was
thing
like,
here.
No.
Right.
Like, no,
based on the mutual thing that we thought was going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
Right.
She's like, I don't think so. I'm like, then what are you doing?
It keeps getting happening? Weirder. Because then she's like, he's like, but you
but
know.
There was also, does anyone remember? There was, I think it may have been one of like the, it was an HBO thing where it was just like Rosie Perez. It may have been like a New York Stories type of thing on HBO where there's a relationship between a man and a woman who meet on a subway, don't say a word to each other, but they, based on the hand movements on a pole, they get off on each other and have a relationship on that, but they don't say a word to each other. And when he tries to, she's disgusted by it. But
how do they develop this language?
But It's like a feeling, a moment that happens on the thing.
I need upon. More information. This no. is not making sense.
It's an
this
HBO
does not make
I'll
sense.
Find it. I'll find it. There's an HBO. I'll find it and I'll send it to you because it was a whole thing.
I do not believe that. But
okay. But there was a whole thing where there was a relationship based on that. And when it went outside of that, that's when everybody got turned off. So maybe they had this relationship based on the mutual spine.
Applying a lot of psychology to this plotline that doesn't mean anything.
Hey, I know, people are weird, Michaela.
I know, but it doesn't matter to this movie, though.
Well,
that is
true.
The
only thing
that is true. We do have to get back to the movie.
Yes,
but
the only thing that I could possibly, I don't know, maybe you'll disagree with this. The only and I think that relationship did get even weirder mm-hmm. after that, because then she's like, maybe I'll think about it. And then she kisses him and you're like, what the
yeah.
Okay. But
yeah, don't do that.
What it might have done for the movie, mm-hmm. right? Is the same thing, cuz Kevin Walker did a rewrite on Fight Club, and this is why I'm kind of bringing
right,
it cuz
right.
Fight Club has a similar third act twist that happens yeah. and I think the idea of both movies is that these introverted characters should have, the first thing they should have done is go talk to the girl, but instead yeah. they indulge this like fantasy mm-hmm. life, and then it's like, here's how that fantasy life plays out, and it's bad and horrible,
right?
And everything would have been better probably if you would have talked to the girl in the first place, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know if that's a Kevin Walker thing,
right.
That could be why her plot is in the movie.
Okay.
It's saying, yeah.
All right.
So, all right, now we're backing way up to the beginning of the movie.
Subway. All right. It was an HBO thing.
Oh, he's got it.
You're right. Called Subway Stories.
Oh.
And hers was part 6, Love on an A-Train. Go look that up. It's a whole relationship based on no communication, but a mutual attraction on a subway train. It's about...
Did they interview both parties for this?
No, what? No,
or is not, this one guy telling
this
story?
A movie. This, okay. It's like an HBO like miniseries where it's like short films.
Basically. Right. But I'm saying, who all participated in this? Like, is this just one guy telling a story about how he had this relationship? Because then I have no reason to believe that this ever really happened. You know what I'm saying?
He's saying it's a fictional story.
Thing. Oh,
it's
okay.
Like it's a fictional short. It's like a bunch of filmmakers together.
Okay.
And they're like, let's do New York stories or subway stories.
Okay.
Yeah.
Weird, different stuff. No,
this is the one about the two people who never speak, but have a moment.
But have a sexual moment on a subway train, and they try and replicate it, and they do it a couple times, but then he tries to speak to her, and she's like, no, that's not what my kink is. It's just between this. It's a whole thing. But look it up. It's, it was interesting.
So the brain scan thing that, happens, we assume when he puts the disc in the, he gets the disc by mail.
Yes.
And puts it in the CD-ROM and he plays it. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're supposed to, so the way that he sees it first is like he's seeing through the eyes of, or, you know, he's having a dream, and the dream is a standard slasher movie thing, which gives, I think, John Flynn the opportunity to do his Halloween Steadicam going through the house.
Yeah, Black Love Killer.
Nice. From Dario Argento, a little bit of that in there.
The way it came across this movie is I was on the slasher movies subreddit, and people were talking about, like, it was a thread of, like, forgotten slasher movies. And they mentioned this, and I was like, that, I'm pretty sure that's not a slasher movie. I guess if you count this one scene, qualifies it as a slasher
movie. So it's, and I guess because you're in the 90s, you're already like, you know, there's been 20 years of slasher movies before this. And so they're just drawing from the imagery. It's like old. You've seen it. We're just incorporating it in our new idea. But here's the throwback. So a man is murdered. We don't see who did it. The implication, of course, is going to be that, like, this game is bad for you. You never should have picked up the phone in the first place. It's hypnotized you, and now you've become a serial or a killer.
Well, how do we get that? Go ahead.
Well, there's a, well, if you're like a horror fan or a freak show fan, there's a whole scene in this that might be kind of triggering for you because the the principal was like interrogating him, being like, that, how could you watch that sick shit? Like all the stereotypical stuff you've heard as a horror fan.
He doesn't even go that naked in his accusations. He's like, what is this like? Lighting up a marijuana cigarette
or
watching a porno movie and raping someone. It's like, okay, big jump.
Not at all related.
Horror movies lead to murder. So this is, and we're saying
horror movies lead to murder. Porn leads to rape.
And, so this is
smoking leads to marijuana.
This is a criticism. The movie then is Andrew Kevin Walker's criticism of that type of policy.
Authority
making.
Figures to question that.
But
the MPAA loved their moral superiority take in this movie, I'm sure.
But what is the moral of the movie? It actually, well, I guess that's the thing. It makes the victim, the user, into a killer, but it doesn't actually count because it's not actually real. It's a game.
Yes.
You know, so I guess that's kind of, you're not actually committing to, like, but the, I guess the movie is going to play out like it is. We don't know that.
But mentally, are you committing to doing something like
because that? Then you're having, I guess it's like the Grand Theft Auto thing, right? It's like you are living vicariously doing criminal acts.
If there was a game where you were, and in a world where there we have a lot of games where we kill people, that's just kind of where we are. In a world where there was a game where you could be a serial killer, but you had to try and cover your tracks.
Yeah.
How do you feel
which
about
it morally
that?
Implicates Dawn? You as
well, I mean, yeah, but maybe maybe more so in vain of this where you are taking the POV and you are stabbing someone and like how does that make you feel? Because
it's like a serial killer simulator.
Right. Yeah, but how do you are you disgusted by that? Because I'm interested in that.
I don't think it's that different from any other video game that already exists, so I can't.
And that, well, that would be
that line is so razor thin.
Yeah, because exactly. that
would
be
my defense of it, because I'm interested in that. I don't want to kill anybody.
Yeah, but like, look how normalized Call of Duty is. That's that is like mass murder, a video
and
game.
I mean, that's what I'm kind of trying to say, is just like, I think the in a world where we're interested in doing stuff like that, I don't think there's much difference in being interested in kind of that kind of psychology in a game where you're just like, you're the serial killer. How would you do it? But also, like, how would you cover it up? How would you escape?
I mean, I guess that is the, but then that leads to the, is this kind of, you know, training your psychology to normalize killing somebody.
Right.
You know, which is, I guess, the argument that's leveled against video games.
And that is the, like, it's warping our children's minds. Like, that is the thing for
Does the movie have a statement on that?
It feels like it sets up, starts to, and then, but just doesn't really
And then it's more interested
it.
In the actual acts of it and the whole thing going forward.
Because I thought for sure like that principle and basically, you know, speaking to the MPAA's like terms and conditions, you know, I thought he was going to be like more of a through line throughout the movie, kind of commentating on that stuff. But no, that gets dropped immediately.
He becomes like a target later on. So it turns out that the dream that he had, Furlong had, mm-hmm. of committing this murder, there's actually a dead guy. The guy is really dead.
And it's the first murder that's ever happened in this town, according to the local news.
Very first murder. Yeah. This town must have like 50 people in it.
Yeah. Well, this is going to involve now the cops are on the case. And who do we have as the lead investigator?
Frank Langella.
Yeah.
Nixon himself.
Yeah. I know, but see, Nixon, had he been Nixon... because he did that on stage, I think, before there was a movie, right?
Oh, did he? Like,
yeah.
The Frost Nixon specifically,
I think both of those guys did that on a stage before. They, but I was like, I remember when I saw this in the theater, and I was like, I mean, Frank Langella was always the king of vampires, and, you know, and Dracula, to me. Yeah,
because that never crossed my mind in this, but yes, you're right, I forget about that.
He's in another movie that I've been thinking about bringing to the freak show for a long time, The Box.
Yeah.
He's that in the box.
Right. I haven't seen it. I don't know what's in the box.
I saw it. It's from the director of, was it Richard Kelly? Donnie Darko.
Oh, okay.
Richard E. Kelly. No.
That sounds like the Ally McBeal guy.
It is.
Yeah, David E. Kelly. Yeah.
David E. Kelly.
David E. Yeah, that's
maybe it's Richard Kelly.
I think Richard Kelly is it. David E. Kelly is that. Richard Kelly is that. Yes. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that movie. That's that Marsden and Cameron Diaz, right? Yeah. I'd be interested
based on an 80s era Twilight Zone episode I kind of liked. But I remember thinking at that point, I'm like, what? You know, is Frank Langella hard up that he's taking movies like Brain Scan? But I guess Frost Nixon was still in his future. So he's in this as the detective who's now tracking down who did it. And of course, that's going to put him in the orbit of. The kid.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you think of the detective? We should mention
when he kills this guy, he cuts his foot off,
it's very true. Well,
the foot shows up in the freezer,
right? So the kid is Edward Furlong sees the murder on the TV, and then he's like, "I'm gonna go to my fridge," and then he ends up like the foot is in his fridge, so he realizes the direct connection between what he's been doing and the murders that are happening in his town.
Yep. Actually, you know what? We're 36 minutes into this podcast, and we have to mention the other lead character in Brain Scan, the one who's on the cover. It does.
It takes him a bit to show up. Mm-hmm. And also, I question why he is the avatar for this.
Okay. Who are we talking about?
The trickster.
Who is the trickster?
Dead Fred with Freddy Krueger humor.
Who plays the trickster?
Look the name up.
He was, I looked him up to see if he was in anything else. I'm just like, I don't know.
Like T. Ryder Smith.
Yeah, it is T. Ryder Smith. Reminds me of, there's a guy who plays a character in, I think, Deep Space.
Yeah, T. Ryder Smith, you are correct.
There's a guy who plays an alien in Deep Space Nine who's got sort of a more of a nothing face where it feels like if you put a bright red... mohawk thing on him.
You know, while we were watching it, I'm like, he feels like a character from a Star Trek episode.
He does.
That was my thing, because he feels like a Star Trek
character. Did you, by any chance...
Oh, because this is the one guy who does look like him. I forgot who plays him, but he's got kind of a mohawk. And
yeah, it's like a big pompadour mohawk, red.
He's an alien. Yeah, he is a Star Trek character.
I'm curious, because the makeup effects were by Steve Johnson, who also did some of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Yep.
This is a naked callback to Freddy Krueger.
He's also like, you should act like Freddy for this.
Yeah, right? I mean...
With half the charisma, my God, it's just, it's not working. Much.
Well, describe to me the personality of the trickster. I mean, what?
Why is he the trickster? Why does he look like this? And what does it have to do with the game?
He's the logo for the game. He comes out of the screen like the ring, and he is indestructible. You can't kill him.
Yeah.
And he demonstrates that by breaking all of his fingers backwards, gouging his eyes out.
This is the Freddy.
Look at the stuff I can do.
Burning me.
Yeah.
They've tried drowning me. Yeah. But I just keep coming back.
Yeah. And
it's just like,
And at this point, we're all just thinking, but why are you here? Yeah.
Right. Why are you here?
I don't need to know what you are. But
why are you the representation of this game?
Yeah. I thought I was getting a virtual reality game, and now I have like this imaginary friend character popping up.
Right. It's fine to have a representation of the game, but why do you look the way you do?
Yeah.
Why do you act the way you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not human. Like, yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. He's an interesting character who is not entirely explained as to why you are the representation you are.
I don't like this in movies. I don't like like
it helps if it comes from the source of of like your brain scan thing, but he doesn't relate to the game
right
in a specific
like
way.
I don't like Drop Dead Fred, and I can't handle that kind of like invisible friend weird energy. Right. Yeah,
well, I think the movie violates its own rules in at least two scenes. Ooh, that yes, that irritate. I hate it when this happens, and this is where it kind of takes all credibility away from it. There's a scene where the trickster is left. So, like, okay, I get it. You've been hypnotized. You see the trickster. Okay. You walk out of the room, but the trickster hangs out watching your TV and eating all of your food.
I guess.
Because that's a funny thing to do.
Because he's a nuisance and he's going to do things that bother you. Or just a part of your life. You're just like, please don't do that.
So you're saying that that's okay in the rules of the. To me, it was like you can only see. I think you should only see the trickster from Edward Furlong's point of view.
Yeah.
But then I guess we're seeing the whole thing by the point of view. And the other one was at the very end of the movie. The trickster shows up after we've been told everything that we have seen up until a certain point was the brain scan hypnotism and didn't actually happen. Right. You did this virtual reality thing and it's over. It's over.
Hypnotism and he shows up.
But he shows up afterwards. I'm like,
so the rules are fast and loose.
Yeah.
For this character.
So there's a so the way that the plot structures itself here is like, well, what are we going to do for the rest of the movie? We're going to give you four CDs that you have to play that are going to arrive in sequence. And if you don't complete the sequence, it can be harmful.
If you don't complete it in time, it can be harmful. We don't get any consequences from that.
No.
Right.
So it doesn't particularly matter.
I'm not even sure what the consequence was. I think they said maybe brain damage could, in that first, like, you have to do all four of these. Cause, but even that was not, you know, a real thing, right? That was once he's hypnotized, this is what he's understanding about what this game is. There's going to be four of them. There wasn't. There was just the initial game, right? So the second one is you got to eliminate the witness. He's timed. That's the game. You have so many 45 minutes to go out and kill the witness. Right. He wakes
up. The timing never really comes in. No. We're only showed that at the end and say, oh, he completed it. The timing never comes into play.
Yeah. And I think on that one, he records himself, you know, because Furlong's having this kind of like, am I actually doing this?
Right.
He what records does he say? I'm 16 years old and I'm scared to death. Is that what he said?
He's like, I'm 16 years old. I'm scared to death. But if I'm the killer, this is my confession.
Yeah.
That's like, that's a, that he went from one end to the other end of the spectrum real quick.
Yep.
For a 16 year old who would not know to do that.
Yep.
These 16 year olds are not confident in shit.
And but apparently,
Sean, he's got to parent himself. His dad is absent. You know
what? You're right, McKill. You're right. His dad is gone, so he's got to figure this shit out all on his own.
And the trickster, so then he ends up, like, apparently off screen, he kills his best friend, because that was the witness. The next one, he is sent to retrieve a clue. I think that was the third one, right?
Rub a clue, like, there's footprints. Get rid of this.
Yeah, but then the trickster calls the detective, like, who's investigating the crime and tips him off.
All right, so we're outside of our main character at this point.
Right, but this is all part of the game.
Yeah,
right.
So it's all technically
all fair game.
Okay.
So there's chase sequences and all that, and then he ends up having to kills the principal who was militant against horror movies.
Yeah, this is the one
because he has,
like,
a horror club
you smoke
at school
marijuana, and then you also watch porn and rape people.
Yeah,
like it's that
well
guy.
It also sets that up as like the principal really wants to get him, you know, like, yeah, I got you, you know, you're the kid, you're the one I knew because of the horror movies you watch. You'd be a killer.
But also, all right, I'm gonna put this out there. The principal is also setting up a boundary that is not crazy. He's just like, you will give it to me, and I will decide if it is good for your horror club. Now, what he decides is good or not is, you know, just like, well, fuck him. But also, like, any authority figure would be like, give it to me. I'll decide. You know, I'll look at the things and maybe it's good.
This is shocking to hear you say this, Sean, because, I mean, again, you know, as a parent and as an older parent, you're not the audience for this movie. The audience for this movie was a 16-year-old.
Would be my kid. Would be my kid. Yeah. Who looks at that principal is like, that's you, Dad.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Have you seen that?
I need to make sure everything's good for you. Yeah, you're right.
Have you seen that meme that's like, I lived it. I watched a movie from my childhood and I agreed with the parents. That's.
I put no. Oh, I po- no.
Devastating.
I posted that, Michaela.
Yeah, yeah.
Michaela,
it's devastating like, when it happens.
Like, oh, I watched the thing and I related to the parent who was just saying, yeah. like, yes, I agree.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's just a getting older thing, too.
Yeah. Parents that's do not have even to step in every thing, now and yeah. again.
And I think, you know, there's a thing, too, about the 80s when whenever they had, like, the adults seem like what I remember as being adults. You know, they right. lounge yeah. in their yes. Well-appointed homes,
yeah.
and they
which
the
is
guy,
what I do all the time.
He, yes. The principal wears a full three-piece suit,
three-piece
with
suit.
With a vest,
and he's sweating his
didn't
ass
he have,
off.
He had little pocket watch.
Did he have a pocket? I was going to say,
did you grow up thinking when you hit a certain age you'd have to stop wearing like t-shirts and stuff and just have to start wearing like adult clothes all the time?
No, because I thought. I thought that when I was
thought
younger,
that for
like,
a long time. Yeah.
Well, not that I would have to do that, but I became aware that like, well, when I get older, like I'm not going to, you know, wear the girls that I know are not going to suddenly start wearing beehive hairdos
yeah.
because they have to. It's like our when we get older, we're going to look different.
I guess I just thought like there was there came a point in time where you're like I'm not interested in wearing my graphic tees anymore. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was part of like growing up. Switch would flip. You know.
I have many thoughts on this. First of all, he went to Beehive Haircuts, which I'm sorry, Colin, ages you a little bit.
Well, I remember all the teachers had beehive hair.
But also
older people
did. But I have gotten to that thing. I'm just like I can't like if. But also I'm single. And I'm older, so I'm trying to attract a certain people. So if I go out wearing a graphic t-shirt, I don't think it will.
You know,
so like there is that thought. As much as we want to fight against it, it is a thought that us older generation yeah. will have. It's there.
And younger people, the older you get, you're so willing to go out in public ugly. When you get older,
they
don't give a shit anymore.
Yes.
Yeah, don't give a
shit anymore. They are so willing to go out in public just fucking ugly. Yeah. But they're also not worrying about the other end of that.
Yeah.
They're not trying to attract anybody. They don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. So, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But when you are trying to be like, I'd like to attract some birth of the opposite sex.
Well, I guess as it relates to this, it's like, did we seed our generations seed like that the appearance of authority because that's what the principal and the cop have by being fully dressed showing up to you know it's like what principal in a high school today shows up in a three-piece
suit? What era that's what I was gonna ask him like this feels way back in the day because no principal from my era or even a little earlier would show up in a three-piece suit.
I think there's a psychological thing that I always read. I read a thing, you know, because Alfred Hitchcock would always show up on a movie set and always be wearing a suit.
Raimi
and so he was Mr. Hitchcock. Sam Raimi and Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
They wear suits when they're, you know. So it's
at Spielberg, my God, that dude's wearing a hoodie and a baseball hat half the time, you know? Like,
but he, I mean, whatever you feel about Spielberg, he earned it.
Yeah. I mean, but I feel that like he always dressed that way. Though.
But John Carpenter directs in sweatpants.
Right. Yeah,
you know, it's
maybe
like,
true. I mean, all right, but you gotta know if you.
I know.
John Carpenter,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But I, you know, Spielberg, I think earned it at a certain point. I don't. What do I know?
Mm-hmm. So there's pardon me. The screws start to tighten. The evidence is mounting against the kid. Right.
The dog digs up the foot that he buries.
The cops are becoming more suspicious, like because Edward Furlong is showing up at crime scenes. This happens a lot in even modern movies where you're just like your main character keeps showing up at crime scenes and just like stop doing that.
Stay
like,
home.
Like, you know, you're getting there. Yeah. Stop doing it.
There was a scene where the principal is ultimately killed is during like a police search. Sequence that materializes out of nowhere.
The mob action in this movie. This movie has like a weirdly fascist tone to it that I did not expect. But the cop, the town cop, Frank Langella, is like, I need you all to grab your guns and go out.
No,
in
he
the
says
woods.
Specifically, if you go out there with guns, he had a whole speech.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. All right. About
he
if you
know,
do, I'm going to confiscate the gun.
You should know better.
Even if it's a water gun, I'm arresting you.
Yeah, but they're all standing there with guns while he's saying this. So it's clearly like
not
a wink and a nod. Like,
not
I will. Okay.
But they do
right after that, they all have rifles.
But we've seen. Every movie before this is like the mob you recruit for the town.
Yeah.
Is going to grab their shotgun.
They've been waiting for this moment.
They've been waiting for this moment.
What What moment were they waiting for?
To kill Ted Hollister in the middle of the town square in Halloween 4.
But in this, you're going out at Michael Myers is out there. We got to get him.
Yeah.
In this movie, there has been, as my count, two murders that happened a couple of days ago.
But Colin's the first two murders.
Okay, it's a big deal.
Ever.
And the murderer is just running around. Well, actually, it turns out he is. But I mean, what are they looking for?
What do they think they're looking for? Did I miss this? Or was it not in the movie? You're right,
because
it wasn't in the movie.
It feels like it's one of those, we're going to get everyone together. We're going to search this field for evidence. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't make sense for this. Because
they do it in the middle of the night.
They don't have any leads. They don't know what they're looking for.
Right, we don't know what we're looking for. There's nothing that says anything is out here for us to look for. Yeah.
But yet they're chasing Edward Furlong.
Right.
Well, only because he is trying to cover up the clue.
He can't stop showing
and
up.
Ends up, you know, up running into their path. But it was like a really weirdly manufactured and engineered set of circumstances where you're like, I don't really understand what's happening here.
Because this is Andrew Kevin Walker going, I want this movie.
Yeah.
And I want it. And so he's forcing it into this movie.
Yeah.
Until he could get that movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Until I can get a movie that will make these situations for me that I want to that I want to happen, I'm going to force them into this movie, even if it makes no sense.
The girl next door sees Edward Furlong coming home.
The girl next door is also Macon Blair's sister in the movie Blue Ruin.
That's a good movie.
It is. What I was going to say, which you should all go out and watch Blue Ruin.
The director of
Jeremy Sonnier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Watch Blue Ruin. Watch Green Room. Yep. Also a great movie. Don't watch anything after that.
That Netflix thing.
Yeah.
What did he do after that?
I was with Jeffrey Wright, and it was bad. I looked forward to that movie, and it was bad. It
wasn't good, but he did specifically. He signed like a thing for Netflix, like, I'll make movies for you. But it's just like,
oh, gross. Well, so they're not going to be good movies then.
No, it wasn't good, but no. Blue Ruin, Green Room, fantastic movies. Great. Go
that was like the announcement of a new talent.
It was.
And then,
he directed two episodes of True Detective Night Country.
That's what he's doing now, yeah. Anyway, because she has seen him, Trickster shows up. It's amazing how little we're talking about Trickster.
Right. How little we're talking about
the movie Brain Scan.
He takes up a lot of this movie.
Because there's 90s Maybe era computer effects, when he comes out of the television.
You talking about the morph.
The morph happens where the two characters morph together, their faces are stretching.
Yeah, it's bad.
There's also that tunnel. Yes. Effect, the CGI tunnel effect that you recognize from like Hideaway or Spawn or something like that.
Yeah, it was like, I'm going to say words. It felt like a flesh tunnel where we're just moving through a vein.
Yeah. People are falling through. And so Trickster determines that she has to be killed. And this, of course, creates a moral dilemma because I love her.
Right.
Edward Furlong says, and I'm like, haven't really talked to her all that much.
Right. We're
emotionally unavailable. The whole she's like calling after him. He's like, I'm not even going to answer you.
No, we're very fuzzy on what this relationship is when killing her comes into question. Mm-hmm. So we're like, how does he feel? But how should we feel about him doing this? It's just like,
And it culminates in a scene where we're going to have to play out this moral dilemma because he sneaks into her massive bedroom. Mm-hmm. Everybody has massive bedrooms in this movie.
Lovely big bedrooms. I love it.
To kill her. Wow. And he refuses.
Yep.
He does. He gets there. He is, at this point, he has been,
They morphed.
They morphed. He has been,
I think they morph because he refuses, right? He refuses. And so Trickster is like,
I'll get in. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think he stabs Trickster. Right,
he does.
And then,
yes,
then Trickster grabs him with his intestines.
Oh yeah, there's a whole like. He's got his whole arm into him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like,
So Trickster's motive, right? The game's motive. This is what we're getting out of this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's by playing the game, we're going to indulge your fantasy. Your fantasy is to become a murderer. You're going to do that. You're going to cover your tracks and all this. But this is ultimately, you're going to kill all your people that you love and that you're friendly with. But ultimately, this is a terminal kick. And it's because, right, because of your mother. So we're working back the theme. Yes. Like, because your mother died, yep, and you've been so torn up about this, it's a pressure point that Trickster keeps on. Because your mom, blah, 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 mm-hmm, you're going to join her. I want you to die,
right,
and kill yourself. It's not, but the thing is, he's not like a supernatural entity, like a demon, where I want your soul, right, and somehow you're going, right, to come in. It's just, I want to kill you. Because that's how I win the game.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the villain, yep, the boss's, yeah, objective.
Still very game. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But he refuses in the end, as we said. And so Trickster then goes like, well, fine, I got a cheat code, and I'm just going to eat you and become you. And then I'm going to kill her in your body.
He does.
But then even that doesn't happen.
He does eat him. Very Freddy Krueger, like and eats him.
Yeah, but Freddy Krueger, they had to do it with like rubber and plastic and stuff. This is CG.
This is all.
And it looks 10 times better.
Fuck you. No. Shut up.
No. Yeah, this era of
where we just discovered this technology, yeah, whether it looks good, we'll apply
wasn't
it to
virtuosity
it
right around the same,
yes,
time,
yes, yeah, like, yeah, this is the era, like there is, yeah, a good 3-4 years in the 90s, mm-hmm, where this is,
it's
like,
10 years, it's, yeah, the 90s,
whether it's good or not, we're gonna do it,
yeah, it's, it is really bad. I, yeah, mean, trying to watch this era's movies now, yeah, that contain computer effects is, yes, like, they don't age well. It looks, no, fucking like dog shit. I mean, no, it's horrible, horrible stuff.
Yeah.
But Edward Furlong still has the, he still refuses to, wait, what actually did happen? Oh, wait, I'm forgetting. So I know he has Trickster eyes. Oh, yeah, he refuses again. Because, yeah, she's then, like, yeah, I love you.
Right, because he is, he's got the scissors, he's got the eyeballs of Trickster, mm-hmm, and he is coming up on her in bed. It's like... But then she convinces him of saying what you're saying. Is like, I love
don't
you.
Don't kill me.
This, mm-hmm, is the reason. Yeah.
And so a moral dilemma has presented itself. And then so Trickster just shows up externally and Edward Furlong is able to vanquish him. How'd that happen? We just watched it.
We did.
I just, wasn't there like a bolt of lightning that came in or something and then they were separated? I don't know.
Holy shit. Are you saying that all three of us can't, yeah, remember?
Oh, fuck.
I've got the Wikipedia page real quick.
Oh, this is really bad.
Colin, I don't think it's our fault because this movie does a lot of switcheroos and
it doesn't have any established rules that make any sense.
Right.
Because the movie, like, literally says it doesn't have to make sense.
Right.
Yeah. The movie says that.
Right. If we did have the rules, I could pivot off of that, yeah, but I don't.
Somehow he defeats the Trickster and then wakes up in his own bedroom. Michaela is looking for this, so we will. I can't. I'm so embarrassed.
Oh, it says at the last minute, the Trickster materializes and opens the bedroom door. Detective Hayden enters and shoots Michael.
Right.
That's right. He got shot.
The detective
totally forgot.
And he, yeah, shoots Edward, yeah, Furlong.
Yes.
I'm going to say none of this.
Which kills kills the Trickster, I guess. Right.
Okay.
Well, that's the.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Trickster has that, like, you, yeah, haven't figured out who I am yet.
Yeah.
I'm you. And you're like, what, yeah, the fuck? I don't.
Yeah, this is all, yeah, just saying shit and fuck, yeah, you.
Because,
yeah,
apparently, yeah, Trickster only exists in your imagination.
This is your psychology. This is within you.
Yeah, fuck, this, yeah, is the video, yeah, game, yeah, that, no, was tailored, no, to your psychology.
You're the monster. So don't play video games. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally forgot that. Yeah. But now that you're saying, right,
yeah,
Frank Langella shows up, shoots him,
we,
and that's the
it
end
for
of the game.
A reason, Colin.
Yeah.
And so he wakes up in his own bedroom. But it's actually several nights prior, because it's, right, the night that he put on the game in,
yes,
the first place.
Yep.
And so that's where we have, instead of, so again, I have no idea what the phone call,
yep,
like seizure was,
yeah,
for.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He wakes up on the night that she's having a party next door. Then he goes to, you know, finally actually, mm-hmm, talk to her, mm-hmm, and we get the, I'm not actually going to date you.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I have been, yep, taking pictures of you like you were, right, dreaming about.
I'll think about it.
And then we get another shot of the same clip of the dog carrying the foot before.
It's
a stinger.
The ending is Edward Furlong goes into, this effort is all over, Edward Furlong goes to the principal's office. He's like, this is what I want to do for my next horror club.
Because that's, mm-hmm, been a whole thing. I don't know, yeah, if we mentioned that, but that's why he got
the horror club
was banned because, mm-hmm, they watched a gory movie in class.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's a horror club. What else are you going to watch in class?
Right.
It's a club. It's not like it's a voluntary thing. You,
right,
don't have
just
to do,
like,
it.
Like,
yeah,
everyone coming here has signed up for this.
Right.
It's a horror club. Horror.
It's in the name.
It's in the name.
Yeah.
But whatever, people seem to disregard that.
Yeah, but that's the idea that the older generation, they're, you know, they remember Vincent Price movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now it's the super gory. Right,
which would not be in a horror club.
Yeah, 80s right. movies. And that's, you know, right. so the parents are freaking out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's where that guy, you know, Froberg. Right. He met Frank Langella is like, you know, like our trickster is like, you have Froberg and Hanley or whatever. And I was like, who the fuck is Froberg? And it was only like toward the end of the movie that I realized that was the principal, mm-hmm. that apparently he was a major antagonist in the movie that I didn't really recognize.
Apparently, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, but Edward Furlong brings like, I'd like to show this to the next class. And it's brain scan. Mm-hmm. It's the game. It's like, I think
so, like the ring.
So, yeah. right.
He's passing off like, the curse.
This game. I think you'll like it.
Mm-hmm.
Then he has to watch it before it lets right. them use it. So the implication being he's going to go on and have a very right. bad trip.
Yeah, it would only be driven home more if there was a freeze frame of yeah. fucking Edward Furlong going, I think you'll like it.
yep. But that is not, Michaela was talking about the most confounded. So the credits roll, right? Mm-hmm. Trickster shows up in right, the yeah, in the chair and he's like, hey, I right, got yeah, this guy.
Trickster mm-hmm. shows yeah. up for, and which makes.
It's a Freddy Krueger ending.
Yep.
Yeah, it
yep.
is.
Yep. yep,
you're right.
And then the credits roll. And then all of a sudden they stop,
mm-hmm. yep.
and Trickster goes, you forgot about something. And then yep. we see what?
The dog carrying the foot again. And it's like, so what? So it did happen? What? Something's bleeding over? What is this setting up?
Yep. Yep.
Well, see,
we forgot about something that didn't happen in the yep. real world.
But we didn't forget about it because we mentioned it when it happened. Yeah. We were like, so whatever happened to the dog and the
yeah.
foot?
Yeah.
But. But who cares?
But it didn't actually happen. It happened in the game. It didn't happen in real life. Yeah.
No, this shouldn't, like.
It's just.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make sense. It shouldn't
yeah.
be.
I don't know. And you're trying to go, like, well, what was the thinking for doing this and yeah. putting this in?
In editor, like, in the editor, producer said, put that in there. Like, there are so many outside influences.
Yeah. yeah.
Said, put that in there. So, who knows?
Did you, by any chance, you know anything about Triumph releasing and put this out? Because
no one does, Colin. Mm-hmm.
I think maybe I've heard one or two other movies that they've done, but I can't remember what they are. But it was a low, a small company that was obviously trying to compete with and trying to make the next Nightmare on Elm Street. Right.
And someone bought them, and now we have.
Yeah. You know. Well, ladies and germs, I guess now is the time when you would like to know whether we would recommend that you watch Brain Scan or not. Now, I know that you've heard us talking, but you never know how these things are going to go. They tend to break wild. But before we do that, stay tuned. We're going to read some of your mail. And in order to do that, we are going to have to summon the man who starred in tonight's movie. That would be Igor, our assistant. Bring us the mail.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Thank you, Igor.
Thank you. Congratulations.
800-555-FEAR. If you want to talk to Igor yourself, that is the number you should call.
Is that the new avatar for Igor right there?
I think from now on, it should be.
Yeah. Okay, well, we should let the good folks at home know how they can participate on this interactive portion of our show by following along on Facebook.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show.
Or X.
At Saturday Freak Show.
Or you can email us directly.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@yahoo.com.
Or follow along on Instagram and Threads at Saturday Night Freak Show. Forgot to mention. So MF Mad, the keeper of the Saturday Night Freak Show Wall of Fame.
Yes,
yes, we are inducting two people from the movie. The first one being Edward Furlong.
Oh, bravo.
Yes, because he was in Terminator 2 Judgment Day, which we did on this show.
Yep.
He was in Pet Cemetery 2.
And
Brain Scan.
We got him. All right.
We're also inducting Frank Langella onto the Saturday Night Freak Show Wall of Fame.
We did Frost Nixon. We did Dracula.
We did Dracula.
The He-Man movie?
Masters of the Universe.
He's Grayskull in there, right?
He's Skeletor.
Yeah.
That was the other one. Besides Dracula, it was Skeletor. Frank Langella, and then Brain Scan. About tonight's movie, Novato Judoka writes in and says, this felt like an extended episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yes, I didn't even read that remark when I said it earlier. It does so much. Thank you, sir.
He also says, it feels like a warm-up for the Lawnmower Man.
Yep.
Tony Bradshaw writes in and says, I think this was the first movie I paused in the middle of while watching and verbally expressed to myself, yeah, you just spent actual money on this.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Stay Sucks tuned. Steve Carney says, yeah, I saw it in the theater. And,
right. Yeah. Similar. Yeah. Money spent. Yeah.
Steve Carney says, some of these technology based films are so bad, like Countdown, Fear.com, and the remakes of Pulse and One Missed Call. You couldn't pay me to watch them again. Every once in a while a great one comes along, like Chopping Mall, The Lift, The Video Dead, and of course The Ring. So we haven't done Video Dead on
no
this
we
show
haven't done
video no remember dead, we yeah. did Countdown though
but we did Countdown yeah
yeah
and
yeah.
we did The Lift and Chopping Mall yeah, so and yep, The Ring yeah. so there you go. Michael Whitaker says, you gotta love these early 90s movies about computers that absolutely does not understand how computers work.
I love
there
it
there is a delightful charm to them.
Yeah, there is a charm.
It also seemingly plays on both video games and horror movies, turning you into killers. It's been a few years since I've seen it, so there's the overall possibility that it was entirely the point to point out how stupid that was. But to best of my memory, that's not entirely the message they got across. Also, Edward Furlong has an AI assistant decades before Siri. That kid should have been a billionaire.
Seriously.
Right?
Yeah, this phone system is sophisticated.
At this point, someone who can answer calls for him?
Yeah.
Millions of dollars.
Yeah. He doesn't even have to say its name. He just goes, talk to me, and talk. Right. And later hangs it up.
Yeah.
Which I always wonder, does the person you're talking to hear you say later before it hangs up?
It should.
Feels like I hope so.
I don't know.
Mike Miller says, oh man, I remember randomly watching this on one of the movie channels back in the day. I heard later they kind of envisioned the Trickster as a new Freddy Krueger, but obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah.
This one I need to revisit, particularly as I've been thinking about taking a dive into some early 90s horror ahead of the In Search of Darkness 1994 documentary coming later this year.
I
look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this one.
It is a good time capsule, I'll say that.
Yeah,
it is
very
great.
Much.
90s yes. time capsule.
Yep.
Travis Legler says, this is one of those movies I always remember seeing the VHS for on the shelf of the local video store. I think I've only seen it once. However, after reading about it, it seems that we have another movie where Edward Furlong has a dead mom or some kind of mom issue in his life. I don't have any strong memories of this one, but something tells me after this episode I'll end up checking it out like so many others.
Yeah.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't even make that connection.
That's
Pet Sematary 2 is the same. Last week we watched a movie called Sunshine.
Yeah.
Adam Kaler writes in and says, I just got done watching Sunshine and I loved it. The cast was stellar. I actually connected to the characters, especially Mace. I feel this type of movie has been done so many times before, but Danny Boyle makes his shots interesting and the tension is legit, and I'm glad I saw it and it was a bright spot in my day.
Bright
Thank
spot.
You, Holly. Yeah, see what you did.
Spot.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked that movie.
Anthony Levia says, I really like this movie. While the story is not a breathtaking storyline or breakthrough,
it's not original.
He says it's performed very well and the production value is high quality. It's the first time I really took notice of Chris Evans' capable acting chops.
Yeah,
yes,
he's
if
good.
Nothing else, Chris Evans.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a fan.
The week before, we watched a movie called Scanners. Mm-hmm. Dom Cree says, being a fan of movie poster artists, I always look for the artist name hidden in the artwork. Mm-hmm. However, I can't say I've ever come across Joanne Daly, who did Scanners.
Right.
Very cool. So I looked her up, and she did the poster for Popcorn.
Oh, that's nice. A good one, too.
That's a good one, too. Yeah, with the face. Yep.
She did Creep Show.
Oh, wow. She's an icon.
She's good.
She did The Initiation. You remember that one?
Yes, that's a good one.
Candle. Yeah,
that
was good, too.
Prison. It's like the skull
nice,
face, the prison. And The Video Dead, which apparently we should check out.
All right,
The
Video
Dead. She should be doing conventions.
Yeah, no, she's good. We love her.
I want to get posters signed by her. Yeah.
Let's boost her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jacob Laws says, honestly, I would put, he's talking about, it's a David Cronenberg movie. He said he would put Eastern Promises over The Fly as Cronenberg's best film, but barely.
Interesting.
I think we were talking
about it. It's a good one.
I haven't seen it. Is it good?
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, I want to see
but it. It's not, like, I prefer the horror, more horror stuff from
Sure,
him,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that one doesn't seem horror, but.
And Lucas Accardo says, Oh, he's talking about scanners. That dude can act like his head is about to explode. He says, new follower from Buenos Aires, folks. Oh, yours is a terrific horror movies podcast, and I can't believe I hadn't stumbled across you guys before, since I'm constantly looking for this type of stuff, and I always get those schmucks that want to sound like they're drunk or stoned and are not funny or have anything interesting to say. Good stuff.
Oh, I love you. Aboard. I love you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for discovering us. Thank you.
Well, thank you all, each of you, for writing in. We really appreciate it.
I love that anybody has a reaction to this podcast. Means a lot to me.
So now we're going to go around the table and tell you what we thought of tonight's movie, Brain Scan, starting with
me. I'm going to go first tonight and say that I enjoyed this movie. I had a good time with it. There's a lot of interesting stuff in this. I think we discussed it earlier about, you know, how would you feel about coming into a game where you are a serial killer and what you have to do with that? I'll recommend it. There's a lot to discuss with this. I recommend it. Colin, you're the only one I can go to because Caleb brought it. Yeah, so.
I'm going to be on the opposite side of this.
Really? Sean. Come on.
Yeah. No, when I saw this in the theater, I had exactly the same reaction. This was one of those, I haven't seen it in 30 years. And so I was kind of like, okay, well, I haven't seen Brain Scan in a while. Right. I know that people have talked about it in the years since, it's kind of, they remember Trickster. Mm-hmm. I remembered that there was a character in it, Trickster. I remembered that it was a CD-ROM that somehow hypnotized you. Mm-hmm. And I remembered that none of the movie was real at the end. And I didn't remember what the actual movie was about. Like that it was a slasher movie or like any of the plot mechanisms there. That's all that I retained in the intervening 30 years.
So you remember that a movie didn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the problem with it. You feel time you reach that conclusion, pardon me, it feels like the filmmakers are just going, well, fuck you. You know, nothing that you saw actually matters. And the reason I guess that I feel that is because if there was a point that Andrew Kevin Walker, and again, I don't know how much blame we should give the writer here. I don't know how compromised this is.
That's the hard part.
But his name is on it, right, as the writer. So it's like if you were making some kind of argument against video game censorship or against the idea that video game turns you into killers. This video game turns you into, well, I mean, I guess at the end it's saying
this is not in the movie to say that.
Yeah. It's like at the end, I guess you didn't, but at the same time, he wants to pass it. He had a horrible time that
he
fried his brain. He wants other people to suffer.
A killer, but he also wants to redeem you at the end.
But he gives it to the principal is the, like, I was hurt by this thing and I want to hurt you because you're my enemy.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, okay. So again, I don't understand. Like, this is a failure, I think, on a lot of on pretty much every point. Mm-hmm. I think Trickster, we have to put a lot of blame on this character. Also, the actor, I have nothing against him.
Right,
But why is he here? Well, I mean, he's trying to capitalize. This is a Freddy Krueger.
Right. Yes.
I know what you're.
Are we just creating characters?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter for the movie. Doing. I mean, we were talking about it, and he can talk about the movie without talking about a Trickster completely. But he's the reason, probably, that a lot of people would go to see the movie, and why you remember the makeup job on him. Yeah, okay. So I guess that's
but
it, right?
I'm saying create a character for this movie just because it was.
We want to have a franchise.
Yeah, everyone's
right, because
to give...
we want to have a franchise. We want to have someone to associate with it. Yeah,
everyone wants a slice of that pie. So how much money this movie's made.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I was I felt betrayed by it.
Did you?
And I think I've long gone on the record. I think this just keeps on. Every time we bring these 90s, 90s was the 90s. Fucking worst
Colin
time.
Colin hates the 90s.
I'm sorry that you guys grew up.
I did, very much so.
Yes, yeah. So these were like the ones that you were seeing.
The ones we saw. And remember, the ones that are burned into our brain.
I was cursed because I had seen the previous decade and then went into this and was like, great. We got, you know, like this and Valentine and, you know, like just to, like
that's why we're here, Colin, because we're here to learn what led to these movies.
Well, every once in a while, I hope that maybe there's one that, you know, is better than I remember it. Dr. Giggles was in the Jesus Christ.
I mean, disturbing behavior.
Colin hates
everything.
This is a symptom of the problem in 90s horror and cinema in general in this decade.
There's nothing.
It's mostly horror, but I'm going to say you can pass. Michaela, what did you think?
Damn.
Yeah, you've seen this story done better and more recently. I would say Serenity is a better movie than this. I would say. I would say Serenity is a better movie than this.
Like the Matthew McConaughey
story? Yeah. I think it does the same twist in a better, more interesting way, in a much more adult way. This movie feels juvenile. It feels really juvenile, and I don't really get who the target audience was for this movie. You think, like, 15-year-old boys is the... Yep. I don't know what this is rated.
It is Fangoria.
Fangoria, right. The main characters of it, it's supposed to be.
But nothing good happens to the protagonist, so it's weird to make it for them. And you know what I'm saying? Like, this isn't exactly like a hero worship movie. Right, yeah, exactly. I think it's Existenz does the same idea of much, much, much better. I would just say go watch Existenz instead. Especially because the twist at the end is the same.
Yeah.
And but Existenz did it way better.
And he is actually talking about
15-year-olds being serial killer. Like, it's not.
No, but it's about people killing in a video game and not knowing they're doing it until the end.
Yep. Right.
It's the same twist. It's the same twist done way better.
Cronenberg's comment, comes across. His position.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And Serenity clearly has a strong position, too. Even though that movie sucks, that movie takes a moral high ground that is insane. This movie, it doesn't come down really hard on either side. It doesn't really have anything interesting to say. It feels very amateur and juvenile. I did not enjoy it, so I'm not going to recommend it.
Well, it's a split freak show, and that means that you are not contractually obligated to watch Brain Scan. Next week, we're going to watch a movie that's chosen by...
Colin.
Colin, I think. Yeah. Yes. Colin, what are we watching next week?
All right, so I know I just said it. 90s movies are bad. I'm going to bring one anyway. We're going to watch The Prophecy.
All right. Okay. The Christopher Walken movie.
All right.
They're
from the 90s. Right. Yeah.
Right. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Oh, okay.
There was a history.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get into it.
Yeah. There's a bunch of these. All right.
Yeah.
Good. This is something we should explore.
All right. So that's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. We hope you'll join us. And until then, ladies and germs, the basement is going dark.